This is Peace Talks, a series of programs exploring peacemaking and nonviolent solutions to conflict. Today's program, bullies.
There's this one boy, I don't know his name, but he's been really mean to people in third grade. I tried to avoid him.
Don't laugh at me, don't call me names, don't get your pleasure from my pain.
I'm Suzanne Kreider. Today on Peace Talks, we'll talk about how to prevent bullying in our schools. Wait a minute, don't touch that dial. Even if your kids are grown, or even if you don't have children, we think you'll learn something from our show today. Let's face it, not all bullies are children. There's plenty of adult bullies out there, too. They might not be stealing your lunch money, but they might be making life tough for you in other ways. Today we'll explore, what is bullying? What makes a child become a bully, and what can children and adults do to prevent or stop bullying? Our guests are Lucinda McConnell, a school counselor at Arroyo del Oso Elementary School who teaches bullying prevention, and Bill Jordan, deputy director of New Mexico Voices for Children, a statewide advocacy organization. Welcome to each of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Throughout the show, we'll also be hearing from a 9-year-old friend who told us about her experiences with bullies. We'll call her Amber to protect her identity, and she changed the names of her classmates as well. Let's listen.
I think there's a story about a girl who tried to cut your hair.
She was really mean to me. I was writing in my writing journal, and she got up, and she said, "Hi, Amber." I'm like, what'd you do with that scissors? And she put it behind the chair, and she said, what scissors? And then I said, okay. And she wasn't the brightest person on earth, so she tried to cut the first part of my hair. And one of the other girls, Samantha, I said, Samantha, you can come sit here if you want. Because I was kind of afraid, and I knew that, she wouldn't cut her hair because Samantha had been really nice to her, and so she got her hair cut. Go figure why she cut her hair.
Lucinda, that was Amber talking about a girl who almost cut her hair. Is that a typical bullying behavior?
I wouldn't say it's typical. In the 11 years I've been in the schools, I've never had hair cutting. However, I had a personal experience growing up in Santa Fe where, sitting in French class with the instructor teaching, someone lit my hair on fire.
Oh my gosh.
It happens.
Well, what is typical?
I think more physical aggression and lots of nonverbal and verbal. Even just a look across the room can be very threatening. Name calling, teasing, put downs.
We asked Amber for a definition of a bully. Let's listen to what she said.
What's your definition of a bully?
When you ask them to stop, but they won't. There are some movies where bullies are kind of framed as to be like, they take your lunch money and stuff. Maybe some people would, but most bullies in my class, they just won't stop doing something.
Lucinda, how would you define bullying?
Well, I like what Amber said. They don't stop because what they want is power. I guess my definition would be any nonverbal or verbal behavior where the motive is power and control, and their desire is to intimidate others and to get what they want.
Bill, how would you define a bully?
I'd say that bullying is primarily intentional. It's intended to do harm, either physical or emotional harm to another person. It's usually repeated. It's usually not a one-time thing. And it's usually something that progresses. It's usually something that gets worse. It may begin with name-calling. It may progress to something more physical or taking lunch money, damaging property, book bag, whatever it might be. And so I'd say those are the key things.
When we asked Amber why children become bullies, she had an interesting theory.
Well, there's this one boy, I don't know his name, but he's been really mean to people in third grade. I tried to avoid him. He's chubby, and people say he's really, really fat, And my mom told me that when somebody hears that they're fat, they'll just be sad for about maybe 3 months. Then they think, well, if I have this much body weight, then maybe I could harm the other people with it or threaten them with it. Like, I have all this body weight and I could crush you.
So, did he become a bully?
Yes. Yeah. He has gone to, I don't know how many times, but he's gone to the principal's office a lot. And they said that he would get suspended.
Lucinda, does that analysis ring true of why kids become bullies?
Well, I think children that become bullies feel powerless in their lives, and there's a lot of different reasons for that. In this particular case, maybe he was feeling powerless about what his peers thought of him. His self-image was being impacted. What I think happens is that there's a lot of fear in bullies, but rather than learning to express the fear, what they do is they express anger.
What's the fear about?
Well, it could be that sense of powerlessness. I mean, maybe they're growing up in a home where they're being bullied, or things don't feel safe in their home environment. There's a number of reasons, but it's that powerlessness that I think feeds the bully.
Let's go back to our visit with our 9-year-old friend we're calling Amber, and she's going to talk a little bit about some specific bullying.
Well, there was this one girl, Samantha. She corrects people a lot, and then if she doesn't get her way, she'll beg and she'll say, like, if you don't do something, I'm gonna do something to you, so I'll make you do that thing. Like, once she and another girl, they were playing together, and she wanted to do flips on the monkey bars first, but the other girl would have none off it, and she said, well, can I do it first? You've been first a lot when we play together. But Samantha, she was just, she didn't like it. So she threatened her. She said, like, if you don't let me go first, I won't play with you ever again.
And so that's kind of intimidating, and
yeah,
people just kind of give in and say, okay, you can go first.
Yeah, like,
why do people want to be your friend? Why is that threatening?
I don't know. Well, sometimes, like I told you, she can be the sweetest girl. Then once you start to be your friend, she knows that you'll be okay with it because you've gotten to know her a lot. But then she starts, if you don't do this, I won't be your friend, or I won't sit next to you in lunch, or something like that.
Mm.
And usually she does it to people who don't have many friends.
Lucinda, what's the difference between how girls and boys bully?
Well, I think just like Amber said, girls tend to use relationships a lot more than boys. They threaten to exclude. Sometimes they'll spread rumors and talk about girls behind their backs to change their social status in their community. Whereas I think boys, more verbal and certainly more physical. It seems as though when girls bully, the emotional impact is much deeper. And when boys bully, granted, it's still psychologically and emotionally very damaging, but when it's a physical bullying, the event actually ends. Whereas with girls, it just continues on in their relationship and impacts every moment of their day.
And Bill, I would guess that there would be bullying in certain minority groups, like kids who are gay, come out as gays and lesbians. What have you all seen in terms of bullying with special populations?
Well, I think we've seen it in a couple of places, certainly with gay and lesbian students. But you have to understand, a lot of bullying starts very early on, and you can have kids in very early elementary schools calling names like queer or faggot, something that they know is hurtful but has no connection to the kids' sexuality or sexual orientation. So the intention is to hurt. The intention is to gain power over. And kids know what hurts. And one of the most hurtful things that you can say to somebody young in early elementary or middle school is queer faggot. They may not even know what it means when they're using the term, but they know it hurts. We've also seen it a lot in New Mexico, particularly with immigrant children, who I think have been the target of a lot of bullying. And I think there's in a lot of schools, there's a pecking order with regard to ethnicity. And so I'm sure that occurs, whether it's African-American or Hispanic or Native American. It kind of depends on the population of that school and what those kids feel like they can get away with.
And that old saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. It's not really true, is it?
No, it's not. I think names are actually more hurtful than the physical aggression that children have to endure.
Lucinda, tell us a little bit about some of the strategies that you teach. You've got an acronym that has the six steps.
Well, one of the things that we teach the children and the adults in terms of how to respond to bullying is we use the acronym HA-HA-SO. So the H in HA stands for help, and that's probably the most important one, is asking for help if you're being bullied. And it could be asking a peer. We really encourage students in the elementary years to go to an adult, and we let them know that if that adult doesn't help you, keep asking for help. Go home and talk to your parents. If that doesn't work, go to your grandparents. Keep asking for help until someone really does something. The A in the HA stands for assert yourself, and I actually teach the children how to be assertive, what their body looks like when they're being assertive, what the words need to sound like, the nonverbal communication that needs to go with assertive communication. The other HA, the H stands for humor. And many times, and this is a much more sophisticated skill, so some of my younger students really kind of are challenged by it. But if the bully tries to intimidate you and your response is to turn it into a joke and laugh at yourself with whatever, you know, the put down or the name calling is, it totally deflates that bully's need for power and control. The other thing in the HA is another A, and that stands for avoiding. And I remember Amber said, well, I just try to avoid the bully. And we talk about strategies. If you know that the bully's walking home at the same time and you know that they travel the same streets that you do, you simply wait 10 minutes before you leave the school so that you avoid the bully. So we teach real common sense ways of avoiding. And then the SO, the S in SO stands for self-talk, because I think many times once a child or an adult becomes victimized and they accept that victim role, that it really influences our self-talk language, the dialogue that we have internally. And so I help children become aware of what their self-talk tapes are saying and empower them so that they don't feed into what the bully is saying and reinforce it in their own inner dialogue. And then the last one is O, and that's own it. So that if a bully is making fun of a child that's got freckles, you know, they simply own the fact that they have freckles, and they show them freckles on their arms and their legs and the backs of their ankles. And it's a lot like humor, but once again, it deflates the intimidation and that threatening component in the bullying. And many times it works.
This is Peace Talks, the series that addresses peacemaking and nonviolent solutions to conflict. We're talking about bullying with Lucinda McConnell, a school counselor at Arroyo del Oso Elementary School, and with Bill Jordan, deputy director of New Mexico Voices for Children, a statewide advocacy organization. I want to go back to a couple of the things you mentioned. One of them was avoid. When I was in kindergarten, there was a kid, an older kid, who would follow me home, and he looked about twice my height, but I'm sure he wasn't. But he was really creepy and scary, and I can't remember what he would do. He would just stand in my path and stop me, and he might have pushed me down. So I can remember, I did ask for help. I talked to my parents about it, finally, and they said, we'll walk on the other side of the street. So I would try that, but he would just follow me over to the other side of the street. And it was very stressful for me as a kid, because I remember it consumed most of my psychic space during the day, worrying, was he going to find me? Which side of the street should I walk on? So I remember talking to my parents about it again, and they said, don't worry, just have your older brother walk home with you. But then when my older brother encountered the bully, he was actually quite threatening. So I learned a couple things. One, I can't protect myself. Two, I need my older brother around. And three, the only way you deal with bullies is to threaten them back.
Well, I think it's really important for parents of children that are being bullied is to take it very serious. And if the suggestions that they give the child don't seem to be successful, that go ahead and enlist the help of the school and work as a community. In the suggestion that you were mentioning, you know, just having you stay behind 10 minutes in the safety of the administration office and then walking with your brother home, the bully, you wouldn't even encounter that child, and he would probably find a new victim. But take it serious and work with the school community as best as possible. Bill?
Well, I would certainly agree. In your example, one of the things that happened was your own loss of self-esteem in that. And that sense of powerlessness and that loss of self-esteem is really the beginning of a real tragedy for a victim of bullying. I mean, there's almost a sense in which their own powerlessness can often lead them to being victimized again, because the bullies easily pick up on that. And it's the tragedy of the cycle of violence that begins with bullying. And it's why it's so critically important that we address bullying in the early years and all through the school years. It's critically important because it does escalate. I mean, one of the things that we know about bullying is that bullying behavior that begins early in school turns into criminal behavior on the part of the bully later.
It does?
Mm-hmm. 60% of kids who were bullies in middle school have a criminal conviction by the age of 24. That's astounding. 60%. Mm. If we could be, and it's one of the ways that we sold this as a policy at the state legislature. Not only did we want to sell the programs as effective in reducing bullying, but when you're asking for money, you better be able to say they're also cost-effective. These programs are extraordinarily cost-effective when you consider if we can reduce later crime even by a fraction, the money that we spend on bullying prevention in the schools now is money that's very well spent.
Yeah, well, that does make sense, wouldn't it? Because there'd be predictors that you'd see in children. Lucinda, what would you recommend parents look for in terms of warning signs that their children are either being bullied or their children could be bullies?
Well, as far as being victims of bullying, I think that parents need to look for a child's change in attitude about going to school. I can't tell you how many parents I've worked with, and their children sometimes feign sickness. They break down and cry. They're not willing to put language and words to it, but they clearly have changed their attitude about wanting to come to school. And as far as helping parents accept the information that their child might be a bully, that's where the teamwork with the school is really important. I know denial serves us very well, because sometimes it's just very difficult to hear that your child may have problematic behaviors. But the more a parent is willing to accept that their child is exhibiting bully-like behaviors, the more that we can actually dig deeper and get down to some of the symptoms of why that child is feeling powerless in their own lives and help them. And I have had experience with children where they no longer need to bully, because we've actually addressed that need for belonging and that sense of self-esteem.
Let's talk about adults. Which of the strategies you mentioned, help, ask for help, assert yourself, humor, avoid, self-talk, own it, which of those strategies do you think would be most helpful for bullies in the adult world? Lucinda?
Well, I guess I would recommend asserting yourself. As adults, we have those communication skills typically, and I think it's really important if we're feeling victimized in any way that we take ownership of that and communicate it. And that's really the first step of conflict resolution, is sending out an I statement where you're feeling you're being impacted in a certain way, and simply saying, I'm not comfortable with the way that we're relating and I'd like to talk about it. If that doesn't work, I guess it really depends on the infrastructure of that work environment. Are there people that you can go to get support and help with? But I think the first step is being open to trying to solve it yourself.
Bill Jordan?
In environments that are highly competitive, I think, lead to the kind of power struggles that perpetuate bullying. And so you know, to the extent that we can be creative and cooperative in our work environments and create a culture, a work culture that is more collaborative, I guess.
Cooperative.
So what you're saying basically is that society manufactures bullies. It's not like kids are sitting around or adults are sitting around saying, gee, I want to be a bully. It's that people have a need to satiate themselves, or there's a greediness, like I've got to have that, or I've got to be in control of someone. Is that true?
I think it is, yeah.
I think we're acculturated. I think we see it on the media. I think we see it with peer models as well as adult models all around us. We live in a hierarchical society, and I think it does show its ugly face on a number of different levels and in different ways.
Bill Jordan, tell us about the New Mexico Child Fatality Team. You were a part of that. What did they do?
Well, I was a part of the team for a number of years. I was on two different review boards, the Suicide Review Board and the Homicide Review Board. And we would do extensive, in-depth case reviews of every child's death under the age of 25. So young children, but also adolescents. And we would do that with the intention of trying to understand how children were dying, violent deaths, homicides, and suicides, and what could be done to reduce our rate to prevent these incidents from occurring. And in reviewing both homicides and suicides, we would occasionally run across a case where when we looked at the circumstances leading up to the child's death, we would see incidences of bullying. And we began to ask about whether or not there were effective interventions that could make a difference and reduce bullying behavior in our schools. And that led us to looking at bullying prevention policies and programs.
How would you find out that somebody was bullied?
We would get all kinds of medical and autopsy reports. Before we had the new federal regulations regarding privacy, we were actually able to interview the victim's parents. And that's often where we got most of our information. In the case of suicides, we part of the autopsy records would be suicide notes. And so sometimes there would be a suicide note that would lead us to that conclusion. In the case of a homicide, if, in fact, the perpetrator was caught, we would have the court records, and there would be in there some history of either a child who, in the course of bullying someone, killed them, or in the case of the victim who retaliated against the bully, finally snapped and retaliated to the extent of committing a homicide against the person who was bullying them. That it wasn't common. It was more common, certainly, with suicide. But when we saw it, it caused some questioning for us about what we could do to prevent those incidents from escalating to the point of death.
And that motivated you and some of the other folks to actually start working toward the legislation that was passed in 2004. Tell us about that.
Well, that's right. We began to look to see if there were any research-based programs or any real effective programs that we knew could work within our school system to reduce or prevent bullying. And we found, in fact, that there were a lot of programs that were evidence-based and that really worked to reduce bullying as much as 50% in our schools.
And in summary, what are those best practices?
Well, the programs that work are really, they're not so much a curriculum, an additional class period to the school day, but they are an environmental change, if you will, within the school, a cultural change within the school. It's an emphasis on training staff, faculty, cafeteria workers, bus drivers, parents, everybody within the school environment, that bullying is not acceptable. It's not acceptable behavior. And this is how we're going to intervene. This is how we're going to create a safer learning environment for all of our kids.
But do you train the children that it's not acceptable to?
Sort of train the children. In the programs that I've seen, the children really get it kind of secondhand. The emphasis is on training all of the staff and the faculty and in how to work with the kids, how to talk with kids when incidences do occur. rather than to sit everybody down and say, all right, these are the new policies and this is the way we're going to do things here at our school from now on. What really works in these programs is the way in which staff and faculty intervene to prevent bullying.
You know, one piece that I have found to be very powerful in actually defining and teaching the students at the elementary school that I'm at is I empower the bystanders, because about 80% of the students in our culture aren't victims and they're not bullies. And there's a lot, that's a huge amount of children that have a lot of power. And there was actually a student last year who had left our elementary school, but as a third grader was seriously being bullied. And he talked about it was the bystanders that stood up for him and told the bully to quit, and it stopped because of that intervention. So I actually go into classrooms and work with the students. The teacher stays in the classroom and we help the students with role plays, practice how to stick up for a victim. We practice ways to avoid. A number of strategies are taught through role play and through experiential education.
Yeah, absolutely. The bystanders are the ones who give the bully their power. If the bully doesn't have anybody to show his power to except the kid that he's bullying, it really doesn't get him much. But if there are bystanders there who see him taking power over someone else, he gets his gratification from that. And So I think that's why the bystanders, it's so important to involve the bystanders. It's something that I think, you know, in the jargon of this, I've heard called the caring majority of students. They really do care, but they're often afraid to intervene. And when they know that the adults in that school are going to support them in intervening, they will.
We're coming to the end of our program. Briefly to review, what would each of you say is the most important point to remember about preventing bullying? Lucinda McConnell?
I think just not to accept being alone with it, that if you're a victim of bullying, to speak out and to get some help. That's essential. If you stay in isolation, you'll continue to be a victim.
Bill Jordan?
One of the things that we have run up against when we've talked about bullying is that a lot of adults say, oh, come on, kids, you know, they need to toughen up, or it's just teasing, and that doesn't hurt, and every kid has to go through this. There's really severe bullying out there. If you as an adult are in a position of authority, if you're relating to kids, and they bring the issue of bullying forward, if they express a concern about being bullied, take that seriously. Don't assume that it's playful teasing. Take it seriously. Listen and learn what you can about what really is going on, because that child really needs your support at that moment.
Right, because if they're experiencing it as bullying, it is bullying.
It is bullying. It hurts.
We've been talking today with Lucinda McConnell. She's a counselor at Arroyo del Oso Elementary School. She also teaches bullying prevention. And with Bill Jordan, the deputy director of New Mexico Voices for Children, a statewide advocacy organization. I'd like to thank each of you for being here.
Thank you.
It's been my pleasure.
To hear this program again, including bonus material, visit our website, peacetalksradio.com. You can also read text excerpts and find useful links about bullying there. You can, in fact, hear all the programs in our series online and link to peacemaking resources, all at peacetalksradio, written as one word, .com. The song Don't Laugh at Me, heard earlier, is by Peter, Paul, and Mary. Our theme was composed and performed by Allie Adelman. Peace Talks is produced by Good Radio Shows, Incorporated. I'm the producer and engineer for the series, Paul Ingalls. For host Suzanne Kreider, I want to thank you for listening.